Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA+, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
How are you doing? Nothing. What's going on? Pretty good.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. You know what to do. You like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover some new ones at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Get a new interview every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm Kyle Meredith today, talking with my old buddy Ben Bridwell of Band of Horses. We're going to get into their album, Things Are Great. It's their first album in 6 years, so we're first going to discuss, well, how the record, as Ben says, almost killed him. No touring, a divorce from his wife, leaving both their management and label. We'll discuss writing a breakup record, knowing that his kids might listen one day, and masking the truth with tricky wordplay, as he says. Ben's also going to go on to tell us why he has such a disdain, I guess. Hatred might be strong, or maybe it's full-on hatred, for a California town called Coalinga. And how there might be a follow-up EP of leftover tracks and the pile of covers that the band's recorded over the years. So let's do it. Discussing Things Are Great, it's Kyle Meredith with Band of Horses.
Hi, Kyle, man. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, man.
It's great to see you. It's been a handful of years now since we had the last Band of Horses record. This one, Things Are Great. Man, it is so great to hear you doing this thing again and getting the music out into the world. So first off, I love it. I love the record. Congratulations.
Kyle, thanks, man. Your sponsors will like pull their ads if you don't say that.
I try not to interview anybody that I don't feel that about. I think I do compliment a lot, but I mean it, you know. It's
thanks, Kyle. Thanks.
Are they going to care if I say I don't like this Band of Horses
Dude,
record? This...
That'd be a whole different chat, wouldn't it?
I do love what you're doing. Also, congrats, by the way, I saw you entered the Billion Streams Club as well. So that's not nothing.
No, it's not nothing. I have to be careful not to be too self-deprecating here. I'm not, the only trophy I really like, honestly, Kyle, is I have a horseshoe tournament like that I play with my uncle and his boys, my cousins, and I got that trophy once. And I look at that one when I pass by, I'm like, that's the one, man. Like, it's even got a dude like throwing a horseshoe. I'm pleased as punch that we've lasted this long, obviously, and that we continue to still be somewhat relevant in people's lives, honestly, however we can be of service. So yes, I accept the trophy, but it's my horseshoe tournament one, beating my cousins. It's still top.
Remind me never to get in a horseshoe game with you. I haven't done horseshoes in not since I was living in the country as a little boy, I think. They don't do it a lot up here, so.
Well, I got this big old dog now during the pandemic, and she's dug up quite a bit of my yard. So I'm like, I don't actually have to dig the pit, you know? I just got to go get the sand. You can come over and we can throw some sheep.
Noted, man. So that's the fun side of the conversation. Now we enter the rougher side because one of the first things I hear you say about this record, when I heard it, I don't know, I guess I wasn't listening right because I was like, oh, what a cool, fun little sound that's going on here. But then I hear you say, and this is the record that almost killed me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, there's that. I mean, and it is, the title implies, is a bit sarcastic, right? So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the record that was trying to kill me. It was my life. But just personally and just the harrowing nature of being a person that can't provide for their family because we couldn't tour, play shows, and going through a divorce, stuff like that. Really bad, really bad. And then the record just sitting there. We broke up with our management, broke up, you know, the label decided not to exercise their option. It was like, dang, dude, we're getting just shelled here, right? Things felt, like they were breaking me a bit, for sure.
Well, to still be able to come out the other side with the music and for it to be, as you've also said, a bit of at least a breakup album, when you're writing about it, and for that being, I don't know when that was, and I won't try to dive into your personal life here too much, but you know, for that to be any time recently, is it a bit like eggshell walking when you're knowing that that's going to be out there in the world?
Yeah, it is, Kyle, honestly, because I mean, even like my kids are getting old enough to be like, okay, even though that dude never shared any of his music with us or tried to pretend it wasn't happening, you know, like I'm just dad. I ain't like some singer person or band person. Besides touring, they don't know what I do. So it's like, dang, now my kids are getting old enough to listen to this stuff. Like, or my ex is going to have to hear some of these stories played out in public. It's still a bit of eggshell walk in there, but there's a freeing aspect, a liberating aspect of telling your story honestly as you see it, and telling, you know, the other side's story honestly as you see it, and being, well, revealing yourself. I think there's something liberating about that, and this album displays that hopefully in a classy way and not, you know, too much, you know, gossip or, you know, like vindictive way or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, I don't know. You've always been able to, your lyrics, the way the poetry rolls out, like, it's not that it's metaphor, but sort of in it, what I would say the REM way, like, I kind of get the gist, but I don't always know exactly what you're saying. And to me, that's sort of fun too.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, to put me in the same sentence with REM when it comes to writing lyrics is, I'm just going to hang up, honestly. I've always tried to mask a lot of truths with tricky wordplay or metaphors. And you know, I have a ninth grade education, so it's not going to go too far. I found diminishing returns on that kind of wordplay. Honestly, I think that's why we had a first iteration of the record where it was done and mixed and good and pretty and all that. But I'm like, I still wasn't being exactly honest with myself of what these stories were. So I think that's why I had to go back to the drawing board, write a few, you know, new songs, clean up or, you know, dirty up the production as it were. And let warts and all approach really go on display here with this one because of that. Who cares about, like, yes, you want those things to be a bit blurry sometimes so people can make their own stories. But sometimes if you can be direct and tell your story for the truth that you know it and be vulnerable at that, I find that it's maybe a more attractive magnet.
What's so we get into the beginning of the record, Warning Sign. It's also the latest single. April 78. I mean, the beginning of the album, like, this is your arrival into the world is what I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
That's a good way to start a record.
Yeah. Well, I hope. I mean, gosh, it's hard for me to be objective sometimes with it, but, and it feels like a bit gross sometimes being so, anytime you're being like autobiographical. But again, there's that vulnerability of putting yourself on blast like that, that maybe lightens other people's hearts and opens up their story maybe even easier. I'm not sure.
Well, especially when we get into the narration, it seems like there's a push and pull. You know, that track, Warning Signs, ending with, we don't want help, no therapy. And then to hear In Need of Repair just a little bit later, you know, like knowing there's the problem, but not letting yourself find the formula. Is that, am I close to maybe what's going on here?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah.
Do you want to lie down on the couch while I ask that question?
For real, dog. I mean, you're my last interview of the day. I wanted to lie on the couch four interviews ago, but still, I gotta be brave about all this stuff. I have to be like, I have to face it, you know? And I don't know, there's been some healing, but even getting to where I am hasn't been easy. And I'm not sure that, I'm not even sure if I'm halfway there to being healed up.
Well, to get it out through the songs, I mean, we hear that a lot, you know, just musicians, a lot of musicians use songs for therapy. I'll also say that, you know, it doesn't seem like that's everything that this record is about. You know, the world views on the record, I guess, is what I'm getting, at least as a listener from Tragedy of Commons. I mean, that line, the hate train, pray that it crashes, jade chattering of neo-fascists, the clatter of ever-warring classes. Now, as we talk about poetry right there, oh, that's God. Good. But so this, am I right in saying this takes more of the worldview?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think that came from, I was reading a story at the studio one day. I was writing that song and I was thinking of, I read a story about people like losing their family to Fox News, like people losing their parents and stuff, or they'll go to their parents' house and block Fox News and their parents lose their minds because they don't know how to work the TV and get it back. And no diss on Fox News, no diss on anyone's political views. Everyone's got their own thing, but it could be CNN as well. But you know, the division lines between us just seem to get wider and wider. And this was, that was probably written in like, you know, 2017, something like that. And it, you know, right before or right around like, you know, Trump getting elected and all that stuff, it really felt like we were more divided than ever. And I'm not sure that we've quite healed that either. It's not like me to take a hard political stance unless I got to. And this one is still a bit ambiguous and blurry. I just thought it was funny that people are like fighting so much, dude. I mean, it's not funny, but it's something that's interesting at least.
And you come from sort of a similar situation geographically as I do. I mean, you're further south. I've started calling Kentucky the gateway to the Southeast as much as anything, but you know, it's that is the thing. It's, you know, I'm speaking for me, not for you. I don't want to project. I'm surrounded by redness all around a little blue city, you know, that I'm in over here, and to be in the music world and to see, you know, artists sort of walk that line, because it does become about division as a musician, that you get up on stage and maybe your hope is just to bring everybody together, you know, but the moment they walk out of there, that line that I just read is sort of what's going on.
Yeah, it is just an observation. You know, it's not trying to call anybody out, even though I will go to Lindsey Graham's office down the road and egg his car. I'm not trying to do that. I try to leave things open-ended and, you know, look for all sides of the story as much as I can, be objective and not try to force people out. I want to, you know, draw people in however we can. I feel like, you know, the pandemic and stuff, I feel like it's been a good chance for us all to come together more, especially now that we can get concerts back and things like that, a chance for us to bond more with each other in the real world and not be hiding behind our phones and computers and stuff. So I don't know. Maybe there'll be some good that comes out of this that we can understand one another better.
But you don't mind pissing off any residents of Coalinga?
No, I don't.
So I'm learning about this place. Really, honestly, Ben, how much of a hellhole is this and what happened?
Oh, God. Well, I was in a different band before this one, and I was not good at music even in that band also. But we traveled down that corridor all the time from, you know, San Francisco down to LA or wherever. And there's going to be about 10 to 15 minutes of absolute torture where all of your orifices are just getting just bombed with like the sarin gas of cow fart. And you don't know how to avoid it. You don't know how to get away from it. You just want to drive fast, but it's also like a speed trap because everyone, you know, the cops know that you want to drive fast and get through there. The people that live there, they don't recognize it anymore. But if you're not used to being from cow country, dude, it's an absolute, it is, like I said, a hellhole.
Great way to end a record, by the way, because those final lines and you know, we welcome you.
You're welcome back anytime. Come on back. We could use your damn dollars at the gas station. Oh, wait, the whole town is gas. Great.
I laughed so hard when I finally got to that part. That was especially coming after, the heaviness of what this record sort of ends up being. Like to end it with that, like, what a relief. Pun intended.
You're right. That was like a bit of a palate cleanser, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just in time for the record to flip once again. Let's go back to the other side.
I love that.
We've talked a little bit about before your artwork, you know, that you always sort of, there's a theme across all the records and everything, but I've noticed, especially with these singles too, there's a really cool art thing happening. Is that you or is that someone else? What was the idea? Cause I love that whatever that style is.
God, that's, you know, we did go through like a breakup with our old management that we'd had for a decade plus. And now it's the new management over at C3. There's some brilliant minds over there, and they've helped us really navigate this whole thing. I mean, to get like a number one, you know, a number one single finally in our first one in our career, to help us find a better art direction after we lost Chris Wilson, who did all of our album covers before. They've really helped us figure out a way to keep things well, cohesive and consistent and, well, interesting. Yeah, so I wish I could say it was me, but no. Got to give credit where credit's due.
It's cool to look at those. And I've been talking a lot. I don't know why I've been on this crusade and everything, but, you know, when I was thinking about the artwork, and I've been talking to a lot of artists about sort of the slow death of B-sides in a way, and I miss the B-sides. But you've got a scrapped album. Some of the songs do make it over, but for the other ones out there, do you see of ever releasing them in any form like that?
Yeah, I've been threatening a long EP called Things Aren't Great because, well, they didn't make the record, so they're not great. I'm still working on the title, I guess, always. But yeah, there's a bunch of songs that didn't end up either getting finished correctly or just weren't the right fit. That are still good songs, I think. It's hard for me to know, but I think there's some stuff there that I'm interested in taking a look at for sure.
What about all the covers that you've been learning over the past couple of years?
Oh my God.
Is there a path out for those as well?
God, dude, I actually like during the pandemic, I didn't write much because I was, well, pathetic. I was just absolutely miserable. And I had this album hanging over my head where I'm like, well, I don't write songs until I can get these songs out. Something dumb like that. Such a silly excuse. But I made a list of all the covers that we've done over the years. And it was something over like 120 songs. I'm like, I'm running out of pieces of paper. But then we started covering songs. Instead of writing songs, we would just track a bunch of covers. You know, we were doing a bunch of Morrissey songs, a bunch of Smith songs. Lemonhead songs, the Amps, the Breeders, like we were doing new Matthew Sweet and kind of like maybe the heyday of being in high school for our indie proclivities and such a great way to in well, to get back into being the fanboys or girls, as it were, that, you know, that we shed along the way of, like, if you get into this business, you can get a bit more focused on your self-writing. It was so nice to go back and visit the things that really made us or got us to this point. So I got a bunch of stuff, man. I'll have to send you at least like a playlist or something.
Please do. Please do. I mean, when you did this stuff with Sam, you know, you guys did the covers together and everything. Like I like that mode from you too. So, you know, if that, that ever makes its way out, I'm first in line. So
dude, there's so much stuff, honestly, Kyle, like I visit like the live stuff. I have a bunch of live stuff that Sam and I did on that tour supporting that record where I could finally convince him a bit to play like, okay, I'm going to sing your old song that you don't play no more. He kind of do the same to me. And it's so cool. Like I get to sing harmony on my song. He gets to sing harmony on his song. And it's such an opportunity to revisit where those songs stem from. And we also have like a live record from the Ryman that hasn't come out yet that I'd like to release. But, you know, bands release or artists release an album and they immediately go to like, I want to release everything now. So I know how foolish that is at the same time. I know you have to focus on the task at hand. So I'm trying to be patient.
Well, it is a good task at the moment. And I mean that for this record with Things Are Great. You guys are taking it out on the road later this year. I think there's a Black Keys dates, right? That's a hell of a bill right there. That's going to be fun.
That'll be fun. And man, welcome, dude. Welcome. We need that kind of like a sustained run, something consistent. And the fact that we get to play, you know, in the middle of the lineup, probably you don't get no sound check. You can go do radio all day. They're basically like, get your stuff on the stage and get it the hell out of our way. So it's like, you put it down, play a little bit and get the hell out of there. So I'm really looking forward to that. And because they're rock stars, there's a bunch of days off. So there'll be a lot of games in a hotel parking lot, you know, playing bocce ball and cornhole and stuff. But then directly after that, we have our own European tour that we had to postpone. It should have been starting this week, I believe, but it had to get postponed. And hopefully we can do that. But of course, tensions are rising like hell over there.
Right, right, right. I was just thinking the first time that you and I think the first time you and I ever met, you were on a bill like that because it was you and Pearl Jam. And we did like a bus interview or something like that. So it's sounds probably right. Been a decade now, I guess. So
look at us. We're old friends now.
Look at that.
We're just old.
That part's true as well. Ben, thank you so much. It's great to see you, man. Congrats, Kyle, on the new record. I'm so happy you guys are back.
Thanks, Kyle. Man, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, man. I think you're doing a great job, and I'm glad to see you doing well over there. Y'all all be well, and give everybody my love and hellos, will you?
Absolutely. We'll see you around.
Talk to you soon, Kyle.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Now, I believe the last time that Ben and I actually did a formal interview was all the way back in 2014. This is when we got to talk about their music, what they were looking for in a record label. And as Ben, we were talking in this interview as well about his collaboration with Iron and Wine. We get into a little bit more of that one. And his love for hot country. So let's do it. Part two, Kyle Meredith with Ben Bridwell, Band of Horses.
And this handsome, beautiful, amazing, specimen. Really bad at adjectives.
Perfect specimen.
It's a perfect specimen. Yeah. Cherub-like?
Oh,
Not so much.
No, not really.
Bearded cherub. Anyway, this is Ben Bridwell, Band of Horses.
Hello.
It's good to see you, buddy.
Great to be here.
Yeah, we're here in Louisville, KY, Forecastle 2014.
Yeah.
This is your first big time at Forecastle.
Yeah, playing the Forecastle proper. We did halfway to Forecastle a number of years ago, and it's nice to finally be here on the big stage and seeing old friends and just being back in Louisville.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you spent some time in Louisville outside of Fort Castle. I mean, you're no stranger to this town, and Louisville loves you.
I hope.
You've got a few fans.
I love them. Yeah, we'll see if they love me today.
Well, you've had this, I wouldn't say downtime, kind of been in some downtime. You're between albums right now. We had the acoustic at the Ryman.
Yeah.
By the way, beautiful.
Thanks, man.
Beautiful. It's a great way to hear you guys.
Thank you.
I mean, I think my druthers is when you're rocking out, and you've got the electric, but it's a nice, you know.
Hey, we got to tide over people, you know, don't want people forgetting about us while we're making a real album or whatever.
And that might be one of the first times an artist has admitted, like, you know what, this is a holdover record.
Oh, there's no doubt about
it. This is something just to keep it out there.
I don't even know if it works. I forgot about it.
Yeah. No. But it was also independent released.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once again, you guys have been on labels throughout the years, and I don't know.
No, we're not.
Now you're not.
We're not.
Is that maybe a thing? Are you guys thinking about going the independent route, or is this a shakeup?
It's hard to tell. I think what we'll do is, like we did a number of years ago for our third album, just record it ourselves and see who's interested after it's done.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice not to have anybody around mucking up the process besides ourselves.
Put a magnifying glass on you and everything.
Yeah.
What are you looking for in a record label? Because you, more than a lot of bands, have really had the experience of, you know, the Sub Pops and the Columbias. I mean, you've seen every kind of side of it and everything. You've got to have a really good picture. Like, what are you looking for right now in a record label? What's going to be the perfect relationship?
That's a great question.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. You're good at this.
I almost get paid to do that.
Man. Wow. I think, obviously, you want a little bit the aspects of both of them. You want the personability of the smaller label, and you want the distribution network of the big one,
right,
you know?
Right.
Maybe it's possible to find a nice, happy in-between there. But honestly, I don't have any expectations about it. I just want to do the thing and make a good album, and then see who. It's usually who just wants it the most. whoever's got the most money for me. Whoever seems like they care about it enough to really work it.
Yeah.
And that's really why we went with Columbia for those last two records. They were really excited to grab Infinite Arms from us. At least that one.
At least that.
Yeah.
I loved your last record.
Oh yeah, it was definitely an album. But we'll see what happens. Yeah.
It was definitely an album. Are you starting to look back on the last record differently than the last time we had an interview? When it was brand new.
I mean,
this is now that your kid's grown up from being an infant to a teenager, and you're like, what a fuckhead he has turned out to be.
Yeah, it's definitely the black sheep or whatever of the family, but I love the experience of it. I love working so spontaneously and having it be so raw and exposed. But I'm the process we're working in now, I think, is a bit more comfortable, where you're kind of afforded that the wisdom of patience, you know, being able to let it steep and take some time with it. I don't know, maybe because I'm enjoying this process so much, I'm able to look at that one and be like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, sure,
you know?
sure.
After this one's done, I'll probably want to go back to doing something weird again.
Right. Well, that was a beautiful record. So, but you guys, you're working on the new record. It's the Here and There.
Yeah, we're about halfway through probably or something like that, but at the same time, not putting any pressure on ourselves to get it done in any time frame. There is no label to worry about.
We
just kind of, I don't know, we pick it up, take a month or two break, pick it back up, work for a couple weeks, leave it alone, and hopefully next year sometime it'll be done.
Yeah.
If it's not, that's okay too.
And I think every band gets to this point in their career. I mean, you've been a band now for 10 years or more than 10 years, something like that, you know? So, you know, and you kind of see that every band kind of takes that point where it's like album, tour, album, tour, album, tour. Break.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, all the press is, oh, they haven't released an album in 4 years. I mean, you do kind of get in the danger of waiting a little bit too long, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen it with some other bands, you know, especially bands like us. We never made that. We were with the class of bands growing up, like Vampire Weekend. And a lot of those bands went big time, you know what I mean? And we kind of stayed right in, you know, I mean, big enough, but we didn't really do that huge jump thing. So I think it is possible for people to forget about us. So I think we're in that category. We have to be a little bit careful with
I think the fact that the song No One's Gonna Love You is on every single mixtape for all time means right. No one's ever gonna forget about you.
Right, yeah.
That if you could make royalties off mixtapes, by the way.
Oh, God.
You guys would be set.
Yeah, that song and the funeral being in every damn movie.
Right, exactly, yeah.
We're at least in the we're in the conversation, but no, the main important thing is that we take our time and have a good experience with the album, I think. And yeah. We'll get on tour and people will probably show up.
Yeah. I hope. I'm sure they will.
Maybe not. We'll see.
I hope the best.
Thank you. Yeah.
So a couple months ago we were talking to your old buddy Sam B,
yeah.
Iron and Wine. He tipped us off. He said you guys are finally working together. And I say yeah. Finally because you were both so integral in each other's birth of
yes.
The career. But it's taken this long.
Yeah,
it took him moving to Carolina.
It did. It's about 10 years as well, where, yeah. Or longer, where Sam and I grew up in the same town, and I helped put his music in the ears of Sub Pop and Howard over at Thrill Jockey, which you know set the wheels in motion for him to get signed, and he did the same for me when I started Band of Horses, took us on the road, and got. Our music in the ears of Sub Pop, so we kind of got each other signed to Sub
right.
Pop. But
this is awesome.
It's taken about 10 years for us to really collaborate on something. So yeah. We just knocked out a covers record.
And that's what it's gonna be. It's gonna be a covers record.
Yeah. We just did 12 songs in like 7 days,
wow.
And just blasted through a bunch of. His band's incredible, and they just work so fast.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of. I was so amazed and enthralled by them that I just kind of watched and, you know, sang when they asked me to. They didn't, surprisingly didn't ask me to pick up any guitars or oboes or anything, you know.
You got that taken care of.
Yeah.
Were there any parameters on what you guys were looking for in the covers?
No, we both just wanted to do, like, we wanted to split it up evenly, like, just songs we've always wanted to cover
right.
And never had a chance to. So, I mean, we were just brainstorming, even after a day's work, you know, I remember, like, an old mixtape he had of some stuff he'd done or something.
You were like, fuck, the funeral's on here too?
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. You should cover that song. No, it was like, I'd have an old cover of him covering like a Marshall Tucker Band or something, and
yeah.
I'd remind him of it, and he'd be like, let's just do that tomorrow, you know? So it was really free.
We're pretty loose
and,
like that.
And it turned out really cool. I mean, you know, maybe things like covers records or something don't have a whole lot of legs, you know, but
fans though it's really interesting.
I think it's
right.
Really cool, and it's not just like a couple dudes with acoustic guitars. I mean,
right.
the depth that his band also
uh-huh.
Those kind of textures they provide are bringing new life to the songs. I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see, man.
You doing any country songs? Because the more and more I look at your Twitter feed, there seems to be this small obsession with hot country,
dude.
That's going on right now.
God, I love it so much.
That's the question: is this ironic? Is Ben Ring ironic, or is he swallowed the pill?
I have drank the Kool-Aid
drank
or whatever.
The Kool-Aid.
I love it so much, man. I think it started with just riding with my kids. Like yeah. I'd come home and they'd listen to the radio, and we'd listen to like modern country, and I heard Florida Georgia Line's Cruise, and
right,
I was like.
Right.
This Smash song is my favorite thing in the world, hook, line, sinker. And now it's so annoying because even on the bus, I've got it tuned to, you know, Modern Country Countdown
right,
on the
right,
TV.
Right.
I know every song. I'm making people mixtapes. Of-
See, there's something I'm afraid of here. There's a conversation with Jason Isbell in this series
uh-huh.
Where he said, you know, all these people, all these musicians on tour listening to crap.
Right.
And when crap comes in, crap ends up coming out.
Gladly. If that's crap, God, I would love for some of that to rub off
yeah,
on me,
yeah.
Man. Those people's song structures are insane. There's
right.
Like a million choruses, you know, and post-choruses and pre-chorus.
Right.
Everything's just as...
Everything's a chorus.
It is.
Everything's
it really
a chorus.
Is.
Right.
It's all
yeah,
sing-along,
yeah.
And it's all... A lot of it's tongue-in-cheek and,
yeah.
And modern vernacular and stuff that's kind of silly to hear, but... I don't know. It does something to me, man.
Yeah.
It lights me up. I love it.
Well, hopefully through the filter of... I'm obviously not the same fan you are. As
right.
You're probably getting this. But maybe through the filter of Ben Bridwell that this could be something I'm
I'm going modern country. I'm just going to scrap the whole Band of Horses thing.
Heading to Nashville.
Yeah.
Going to do the songwriting under the fluorescent lights.
We're gonna have like 10 people help me write like 4 words.
That's it.
Coming up. I could use it.
Third for a word?
Yeah, third for a word.
Yeah, that's the old Nashville thing,
okay,
right?
Okay, there we go.
That's how you get paid, third for a word.
See, you're teaching me stuff already, man. Dip my toe in.
Yeah, so now with country on one side of this and your kids on the other thing, you're really set up to take over Dad Rock. Like Band of Horses is the king of dad rock.
A little bit, man. Yeah, with all these kids everywhere and the beards and aging body, I think. Just going right in there, man. Yeah.
Dude, I am so much a fan of everything you guys have done. So I figure whatever you end up doing on this next record is going to be fantastic.
Unless it's not.
Yeah. And then I'll lie to you in an interview.
And we'll do an interview again.
Man, it's so great.
Great to see you, Kyle. Yeah, thank you, man.
All right.
Now we'll jump back a couple of years beyond that one to 2012. Mirage Rock was the record for Band of Horses at the time. I got to talk with the gang about leaning more on acoustics and collaborating with producer Glenn Johns, finding comparisons to Americana, and a lot more. So this is 2012 with Ben O'Brien during the DeLuna Festival in Pensacola, Florida, part 3 of Kyle Meredith with Band of Horses.
We are here in beautiful Pensacola, Florida, the DeLuna Festival. I've got Ben and Bill from Band of Horses. Welcome to Florida, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just commenting on the paleness of us all, I guess, because...
Pale skin is healthy skin.
Pale skin is healthy skin.
Yeah, I've heard
remember that.
We were just in Europe for a couple weeks, and we fit right in there.
Sure.
Now we got to get back to the... I guess...
Are you guys ocean people?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think all people are.
Sure. Right? Well, from the ocean. Yeah?
Exactly.
Of the ocean.
No creationism around here.
Not in the south like Florida that we are. No. No, congratulations. Been loving the heck out of Mirage Rock.
Awesome.
It's one album after another, you guys have stepped up. There's been a consistency in your sound, but yet every album has done a little something different. And I'm going to bring up the big A word that I'm sure you're getting a lot, but Americana seems to be stamped all over it this time around.
Yeah.
More than usual, I guess.
Yeah. There's lots of A words.
Maybe it's we used a few more acoustic guitars on this one. That could be what it is, but I don't think that we really knew what Americana was at that point.
We felt like it was really rowdy and rock and roll sounding. But I can see where the acoustic guitars being so prevalent on there could give it that vibe and just the America, the band America, all over it.
When we were thinking acoustic guitars, we were thinking more the way they sound in Europe and Britain and stuff, so we like the way those guitars sound.
That's an interesting way to take on it, especially, you know, hearing it from you guys' side and then hearing it, I guess, is how I perceived it, because I've always felt like what you guys have done have been, like, always really good road records. There's something about your records that works so great for the road. This one, it just turns out, is not a car, it's a horse.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, you can still take... Like convertible horses.
Convertible horses.
Yeah, exactly. Pants down, top down kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely coming back, horses are.
Well, now you're 4 albums in. How does it work now? Your first album is, that's your debut. The second album is proving it wasn't a fluke. Your third album, you know, you're in for the long run. What does album 4 end up being?
It's hard to tell because the third album was considered terrifyingly disastrous the first week. And then now it's like our crowning achievement. it seems like this one, depending on how it's gone so far the first week, this one must be the best album ever made.
I think all of those words in that order make perfect sense.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, the best album.
I like the way you think.
It's the first album ever.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
You know, we're not putting it up on a pedestal or anything.
No, just a lot of this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, good job, me.
And the other big side of this was you brought Glenn John on this. You know, so, I mean, this is no small name right here. I mean, it seems to me when someone says, I want to work with Glenn Johns, you're saying, in a sense, that I would like to make a classic-sounding record. Because, I mean, he is a master of classic-sounding records.
Yeah.
When you bring him in, though, does it feel very specified to what you guys are doing, or is it more of a paint-by-numbers thing with him? Are you fitting into his mold, or is he fitting into yours?
I think a bit of both, really. There were certainly songs that we brought that maybe he didn't quite get, you know, but was happy to embrace that side of our sound. And there were things that, obviously, his wheelhouse being a lot of the rock and roll stuff, I think we brought some of that to him. So he was the sixth member of the band for those weeks.
Right.
And we all just... did whatever the project that day called for. Yeah.
Well, how was that, actually having someone else in the band? Because I know you guys have said that more than once. Like, he kind of was. He was working with the process and everything.
Yeah.
It's really, it's it's a good process because it gives, it's like an outside point of view at the same time, so it helps us like have someone to bounce stuff off of and stuff.
Yeah, instead of it just being, you know, trapped in your own head or whatever, that inner dialogue saying, are we doing enough, you know, or is this the right song? Shut up, go back to work, you know? It's nice to have someone in there to be like, don't think too much and just do what you do.
I hope Glenn actually sees this video one day and sees your impression. That's it right there.
Stupid boy, back in.
As far as being in your own head, we've talked in the past, like, you know, about your, the way you would write a song, you'd go into private, you'd, you know, because you had to be in private to belt it out.
Yeah.
Whether, I don't know if that's a shyness towards the new songs or what, but did you, I can't imagine you actually got that, that freedom with this one, with the way this was all put together.
Well, I got some, like, I did a week up in the Smoky Mountains just messing around, which ended up probably the least productive session of the whole writing process. But mostly now it's relegated to hotel rooms where one of these guys on the other side of the wall, luckily, hopefully Bill or Ryan, that, you know, might be working on music as well, unless if it's like a crew dude on the other side who's like so sick of hearing me complain loudly all the time. Like, so no, there's a greater responsibility now, having kids at home and being so busy like we are. It's whenever you get a second, try to work on something.
Yeah. It's heard something interesting in there. A new title for a lead singer is Professional Complainer.
Yes.
Or a Public Complainer.
Publicly loud, whining, just,
It makes for great art.
Yeah,
it makes for great art.
Yeah.
I want to reference my notes on this one because there's some lyrics in this. This also feels like an age record. We're talking about age a lot. How to live, guess what, you're getting old, still got to grow up. Slow Curl Hands of Time in itself, in the title right there. A little biblical pulls the chorus. I'm old enough to know in a dumpster world, I'm getting old. So, what's on your mind?
Man, just feeling like I've got all the time in the world. Better, feeling better.
Yeah, is age easy to write about? Like, love is easy to write about. And is that something that, you know, I mean, we're all, you know, in our 30s at this point. And
I guess so. I mean, I didn't even think of it like that. I mean, I didn't even notice there were that many
just
references
blew your
like
mind.
That. Exactly. Well, some of it's funny because some of it's not exactly about me. It can be about somebody I know or sometimes even fictional stuff in the lyrics. So it's hard to tell why I kept going towards that, but for some reason, I guess I must be looking at myself. I must be getting old. Yeah.
You look beautiful.
I feel like I look perfect.
See, right here? You're getting the compliments on both sides. To bring this song back up, How to Live, really been a good one for me and everything. It's an interesting turnaround on the chorus. I guess it doesn't go to that spot that you think it's going to go to. Kind of wondering how that song specifically came together.
Bill?
Well, it started with a drum pattern, kind of like focusing on just having fun with it. And we sort of arranged it when we were staying in the desert. We went out to the Queens of the Stone Age studio. So I think we just sort of thought that the way those changes kind of got us excited, the way that they kind of fall down for the chorus and stuff. So
Bill brought that one to us. I think you brought it to me as an instrumental piece, and we started working on different ways to do it. A lot of these songs Bill actually wrote the music for and would throw it to me in an email or something. I'd be like, you know, complain loudly in a hotel room and send it back to him. But yeah, that one stuck around and it's got a cool, wild little feel to it,
I think. Sure does.
Yeah, I love it. It really did just stand out right there right from the beginning. You know, it's one of those ones. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really?
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Once again, Mirage Rock, this is a beautiful record. You really outdone yourselves. Complaining publicly seems to kind of work. Part of your guys' wheelhouse, so thank you so much for stopping by, and thanks for the music.
Hey, thank you.
And there we go, three parts with Band of Horses. I had another interview with Ben a few years before that one. I don't know. I'm going to have to find that one, dig that one up. We did that one on the tour bus while they were opening up the Pearl Jam tour that year. I got to find that one. But big thanks to Ben Bridwell. As always, the brand new album from Band of Horses is called Things Are Great. And thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. New ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. At iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, mostly on Twitter, also Facebook and Instagram, all three of them, at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
Man, you survived so far.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith from Kyle Meredith With. After you check out the latest episode of my show, be sure to check out some of our other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including Standing BTS, a bi-weekly podcast covering all things BTS and ARMY, and The Opus, Consequence's original documentary podcast exploring legendary albums and their lasting legacies. So head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.